rest.
What is up, everybody? My name is Jake Rowe. This is Palmer Toms. We are from Dogs HQ. This is the Georgia Show, where we're going to talk about Kirby Smart's press conference from Tuesday. We're going to talk about what he had to say about the scrimmage, what he had to say about injuries, what he had to say about a lot of different topics. We've also got an NFL head coach basically shooting a commercial for Georgia, and we got a new partner that we want to introduce to you guys. Palmer, what's going on with you, dude?
Nothing much. Just, you know, like I mentioned to you a little bit before, you know, knock on wood for Georgia's sake, it's been a little bit boring of a preseason camp. And I think that's a good thing for Georgia. But I think for the rest of us, it means, and I get this sense on our message board, we're ready for football. We're all ready for the actual thing. None of these players want to talk about fall camp anymore. None of these players want to talk about the same things that they talked about during spring. None of them want to talk about position battles, yada, yada, yada. They're ready to start talking about Clemson. And I think that that's welcomed.
Yeah, they're ready to hit somebody else too.
And yeah, that's what it all comes down to.
Yeah, they're ready to kind of hit somebody else too. And I think that, you know, I mean, obviously Georgia, I don't know. Boring is in the eye of the beholder. There hasn't been a whole lot of drama. There aren't a whole lot of like premium burning position battles that concern you, other than injuries. And honestly, the case can be made that much has been made of injuries. More has been made of the injury situation than it actually is, because that has been kind of the only news there. Yeah. Georgia is a little dinged up now. Don't get me wrong, but that's camp and that happens. But you know, ultimately, I do think it's become a bigger story because of, like you said, it kind of has been the only story.
Well, and I mean, think about last year. You had the two-time defending national champions replacing a starting quarterback and, you know, a complete unknown at that position.
Was it right around this time that Kirby announced him as the starter?
Yeah, it was after the second scrimmage. So it was we talked to him on that Saturday. And he named him the starter on that second scrimmage Saturday.
Yeah, I knew it right around that
time. Then I believe we talked to Carson on that following Tuesday, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, that's wild, man. I mean, what a difference a year makes. You're right. There was some quarterback drama. There was some running back drama. Like, are they even going to have enough running backs to play? You know, Kendall Milton had gotten banged up during camp, and Dejan Edwards didn't start the season. Obviously, the schedule was a little softer. It was a little bit softer, like to begin the season than it is now. But Georgia's got to face off against Clemson, and you know, Kirby. One of the things, and we'll get into kind of what Kirby talked about, just to kind of hash over it a little bit for you guys. One of the first things he talked about was, hey, you know, we're still in, you know, kind of us mode, you know, looking at us, trying to figure, you know, get better ourselves. Sounds like today, maybe tomorrow, they start working on future opponents. That's pretty standard stuff. Kirby also dug into, you know, a number of other topics, and one of those was the scrimmage from Saturday. And, you know, it's kind of – We used to get the coaches right after the scrimmages. Like, they would kind of come over and talk to us after the scrimmage. That's stopped completely. And Kirby kind of gets back to us on Tuesday. And Palmer, I don't know what stood out to you, but to me, to hear Kirby, who has, by all accounts, and, you know, in talking to us too, been very critical this preseason, I would say, a little more critical than he normally is. To hear him say, you know, that he was very pleased with, or he was pleased with the growth from scrimmage one to scrimmage two, I think was pretty, you know, positive comment for Georgia fans.
Yeah. And I think we've always heard that there is the most growth from scrimmage one to scrimmage two. And the players harped on that all of last week. They said, you know, hey, we need to improve. They were aware of it. Coaches were aware of it. And so, you know, I think that is certainly welcomed news. Because as you get closer to the actual thing, to the football being played, you want to be rounding into form. And it sounds like you know, maybe not necessarily from the scrimmage reports that we put out, but it sounds like I would say that the coaches feel confident that they are starting to round into form. And some of that I would also say could be just, you know, Kirby's messaging from that first scrimmage versus his messaging from the second. You know, he wanted to send a message to his team after that first one and knew how big of a week that was. You know, Brian Kelly called it a moving day in Baton Rouge. And I wrote on that a little bit. And, you know, Jake, I know you're a golf guy too. And that Saturday in a golf tournament is so important. It's not the end. It's not the finish line, but it sets you up for that. That's what last week in that second scrimmage was at Georgia. You're muted.
Yeah, it's a good point, and I think it, you know, it's also pretty, you know, symmetrical there when you look at the fact that it's also on Saturday. But it's that is exactly what it is. It's a chance to kind of step up and solidify something. We wrote a couple of different things on guys making moves after the scrimmage, and you know, one of the things that, you know, you kind of get to see is how much the coaches want to get to see is, you know, Dominic Lovett and Tate Ratledge and Trevor Etienne and some other players played one series and then they're out, right? They want to get a look at a bunch of other people in those scrimmages. They want it to be a proving ground. They want that to be what separates the men from the boys. The one thing that I will always say about Kirby, though, about these scrimmages, is Kirby wants there to be – he makes an effort to do this. Because of the timing of the scrimmage, he gets them out there during the hottest, most humid time of day, and they go 100 miles an hour. And then when they don't finish the scrimmage, when he knows that he has simulated something way harder than what they're going to have to deal with on a Saturday physically, and they don't finish physically, he gets tough on them. And I'm not saying it's unfair. I'm just saying that's kind of the demand and the accountability that you deal with at Georgia. And, you know, I always hate to do this. I always hate to be kind of the guy who covers the team, who's talking up the team. But that's just fact about what it is at Georgia with all that stuff. And, you know, that kind of passed through my head as Kirby was talking about improvement from scrimmage one to scrimmage two. I was like, dude, you safely – wanted them to come as close to dying as they possibly could.
They wanted to see failure.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you pushed them to complete failure in that first scrimmage. And of course, you know, you're going to be, you know, they're going to get something from that and they're going to look better in that second scrimmage. But I just thought that was really interesting. And you know, think that kind of whole, and listen, I agree with the philosophy. I think the philosophy is rock solid. I think what he's
it works.
It's tremendous. I think it makes these guys better humans and better football players at the same time. But it is, when you kind of break it down and put it in some different compartments, it sounds almost a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah. I get what you're saying there, that it's like, hey, I'm going to set you up for failure. And then the second time I'm going to make it a little bit easier on you. And then after seeing that second time and seeing the improvement that you make coming out of that and tough times, you know, do test you and they do make you better. But you know, to do that and then, you know, prop them up and say, hey, good job guys. You know, proud of this team.
He wasn't propping them up after the scrimmage. He was like, I was disappointed. After the first ones, we got no depth. And I mean, he pushed them to failure, then got on their case through the media. And then, you know, kind of, made it, I don't know, man. Kirby's just got his own way of doing things, and the accountability part's the massive part of it. You heard T-Rob say it about, you know, Kirby getting on him on the mic and you know, different management style there and all that stuff. That's, you know, that's Kirby's kind of become notorious for that. He pushes and people to their limits, and I'm sure he can't be the easiest guy to work for, but I'm sure hardware makes it a lot easier to deal with.
Yeah. Jake, this was another thing that took me, caught my eye yesterday Tuesday in that conversation with Kirby, was what he was saying about depth versus development. And I know that caught your eye because I read your, you know, takeaways from Tuesday. And that was something that you wrote about, and that Kirby has fans may not love seeing it. I think the wide receiver spot was the one that you know, maybe was where he
harped. Well, I think depth versus development might not quite be the right thing for it. It's more like, I think it's more chemistry versus development, or chemistry versus depth. I think, you know, what Kirby got into, and I thought it was really interesting the way he said it, is he said something that I've never heard him say. I've never really heard any coach talk about it, but I don't listen to a lot of other coaches talk. But listening to Kirby talk about it, he said something that we've discussed on the dog walk and message boards for a long time, which is kind of like shortening that rotation at wide receiver and at other positions too, but shortening that rotation. And now that I think about it, it was a big deal for Georgia's offensive line for the discussion around that 2022 offensive line. When Georgia was playing so many guys early on, everybody was like, hey, listen, let's get the five, let them play together, and maybe they'll play better, because they got off to a little bit of a slow start that year, kind of handling pass rush stuff. The rotation never did really get squeezed, and Georgia just got better as the year went on, and they were able to absorb some things. But you have to make a choice during camp. Hey, listen, are we going to shorten the receiver rotation or the rotation in another position and get these guys playing together and get them ultra ready to play and play together? Or do you use that kind of 2.5 weeks of camp and you play as many guys as you possibly can, and you mix and match combos, and you get, like I said, as many guys as you can ready to play football? And Kirby said that they chose the latter, that they've chose the idea that, hey, listen, we're going to spend those 3 weeks, it's probably, you know, probably closer to 15, 16 practices that they're going to get in there. They're going to spend that time, getting everybody ready to play. And then they're going to, you know, kind of stick their head down for that last couple weeks and develop the chemistry.
How about this? Depth and development.
Depth and development.
Depth and development. You know, and it's really more of a chemistry and continuity versus depth and development.
Yeah.
I found that to be an interesting conversation that he was having there. I think with the receiver position, with the offensive line, I think we've seen that Georgia's not going to, you know, find five on the offensive line. They're going to find six or seven, and they're going to feel really good about those six and seven.
Yeah, they're going to find at least seven, and more often, like right now, I'd say they've probably got 10.
And it's their way of, you know, being able to transition from one year to the next and feel really good about that group every year. You know, when you lose a guy like Cedric Van Pran, okay, well, Jared Wilson has played. And center is probably the spot that they have done the least amount of rotation with. And I'm interested to see if that maybe – I don't expect that to change because of just how much the center is the centerpiece of an offensive line. And how unique that position is. It's more of a niche position than tackle or guard or whatever. And so, but I'm curious to see, because Cedric was in there in 2021 before they really started the rotation. That was, you know, Matt Luke offensive line. 2022, they do start that rotation with Searles, but they didn't start rotating at center. Maybe now that Cedric's gone, they rotate at center, but I don't necessarily think that that's going to happen, but they've been able to build some depth there through Jared being out. But I think that, you know, the guard spots, the tackle spots, they're going to continue to rotate those. The receiver spots, they're going to continue to rotate those at least early on in the season. And I think it's their way of being able to feel really good about not just your top three guys, not just your, you know, two deep, but being able to say, hey, you know, well, we lost someone on the two deep to an ankle this week. We feel really good about bumping somebody else up into that two deep and still being able to run out there and feel really confident with this offense.
Well, there's multiple ways to look at this from a chemistry standpoint. I totally get it. Like, there is no doubt in my mind that part of LSU's 2019 success was the fact that they had four guys that they were going to throw the football to. It was Jamar Chase. It was Justin Jefferson. Was that his name? Is it Justin Jefferson?
Freak Show.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they've had so many Jeffersons, it feels like, at LSU that I get really mixed up with them. But Justin Jefferson, Terrace Marshall, and Thaddeus Moss. And then you had Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the backfield. I mean, it was those guys. Those guys worked together, and they pounded, and they stayed healthy. And that was very important for them. Like, they all stayed healthy. They'd have been fine with one injury. A couple injuries, though, it might have gotten really shaky for them. Joe Burrow would have probably secured a lot of ills because he was that good. But they developed a ton of chemistry. Well, if you choose to develop depth like George is doing, you are giving up some of that chemistry. But here's what you get. You get players getting the chance to play and potentially, you know, you having some ammo when it comes portal time. Okay. Like, at that point, you're sitting there like, dude, listen, you played 211 snaps for us last year. You know, you've got that to kind of go with, and that's very important. You want to talk about depth and development leading to maybe some continuity down the road? That's kind of where the continuity may come back to you.
Well, and I don't want to interrupt you, but along those portal lines too, it probably also allows you to be able to bring in three wide receivers from the transfer portal and say, hey, don't worry, you're all going to play.
Yeah, that's true. That definitely helps there. And then on the other end, obviously, you've got somebody to step in. You've got more players ready to play. You got more guys engaged in practice. And you know, that's a big part of it too. Like, that's the part Kirby won't say, I don't think, is that when you are a, you know, theoretically a number nine receiver coming in, you know, a scholarship guy, then you may even have a walk-on ahead of you or something. Like, I mean, you may be very far back. When you start to get reps with the twos, you're kind of like, okay, well, here's my chance. I got to do something. Get a few more reps with the twos. You may want to start earning something. You know, then it kind of
becomes bought in. It's a way of creating buy-in and making everyone. And look, Kirby's not out for feel good. Like, hey, I want everyone to feel good about getting themselves and be a part of this team. But it is a way to do that. You know, get everybody involved. And you know, when you're taking 70 guys or 74 now on a travel roster, all 74 of them are bought in.
Yeah. And then once you get a chance to kind of nail down some of this chemistry, and you know, that they're talking about some of the continuity he's talking about here in these last couple weeks before the season, then you have the option all year long, by week, whatever game plans going forward, of tightening up that rotation like Georgia did at times last year. But one of the biggest keys to being able to tighten up the rotation is making sure that there's enough tread left on the tires.
Yep.
Because it takes a special athlete. We're talking about, you know, Jamar Chase, Jerry Jeudy, you know, just absolute freak show athletes to be able to just do it at an extremely high level all year long like that. And I'm not saying Georgia can't or Georgia doesn't have those level of athletes. They've got some studs. But I do think that you're talking about being better in some crunch moments and deeper in some crunch moments. And I don't think there's a wrong way to go about it. I think that there's opportunity cost on both ends.
Well, and – think about it now in an expanded playoff where you're going to be playing more games to go win a title, you know, whether you have that first round bye or not, you know, whether you make a conference championship or not, you're going to be playing more football games if you want to win a national championship, 16 or 17 football games. And so,
yeah.
You know, I remember this summer people were asking us, hey, are these freshmen going to be, you know, getting involved in the running back room? And I always said, you know, but this is before we heard all the buzz about Nate Frazier, but, you know, I always said, hey, somebody's going to have to play from that running back room. And honestly, all those guys are probably going to have to play some, because you don't want to put too much on Trevor Etienne and you know, have him by game 12, 13, 14 be worn down. You know, maybe against a Tennessee Tech or a, you know, when let's say Mississippi State gets, you know, some of these games get in hand, give Chauncey Bowen some reps, give Dwight Phillips some reps. You know, you've got the luxury there of numbers now to be able to spread out some of those carries and, you know, keep that tread on the tires.
Yeah, it's a big part of it. And, I mean, I know we probably make more of a long season than it really is. It's probably marginal, but I also think we discard the marginal maybe more than we should. That, you know, that's kind of, you get marginal edges along the way, and it kind of turns out to be a big edge, you know, there at the end. And Palmer, all of these guys that we've just talked about were recruits at one point. All of them were highly touted recruits. Georgia's got a lot of them committed in its, what is it, number four ranked?
Number four right now.
Number four ranked 2025 recruiting class. And our newest partner at Dogs HQ can help you get that. NFHS Network. The NFHS Network. Man, that is such a mouthful to say, but it is such a cool site. Palmer and I were kind of messing with it before we came on the air here a little bit. They're our newest sponsor. They're our newest partner, and we're really excited, fans. I know dog fans can never get enough when it comes to top recruits, which is why I think the NFHS Network is the perfect solution for you. With the NFHS Network, you can watch all your favorite players live each week. If you're busy, you can't watch live, you can stream it on demand. You can even clip highlights of your favorite moments to share with your dog fans through text, email, social media. Right now, you can go to nfhsnetwork.com. That's nfhsnetwork.com and sign up. And that'll give you access to tons of games, multiple states. Palmer and I were looking at it earlier. Talon Taylor, Georgia's top wide receiver commitment in the 2025 class. We think he's got a scrimmage going on because he's got a game scheduled for Friday night at 6:30 p.m. Eastern time. There's no opponent there. It says away. But you see there are multiple games coming up on his schedule throughout the year. You can watch those. You can watch those live. You can watch those on demand. I think the whole clipping, being able to clip things out and send them to people is actually really cool too. I plan on doing that a lot myself as I kind of check through this. I know Langston Hughes and Georgia commit Dontro Glover is in action this coming week.
North Dakota, Landon Rolden.
Landon Rolden is also in action. There are a ton of Georgia commitments kind of
Robinson.
Yes, on the streaming service every week, there are tons of Georgia commitments. Tons of Georgia high schools are playing. So if you wanted to check out your alma mater, I'll be honest with you, man. This past Friday night, for the first time in a long time, I had my second screen set up for my computer, and I had a screen on the TV, and I was watching one game one place, one game another, and I had NFHS going on my computer. I had it going three different places. I was watching high school football like crazy, and I had a blast doing it. It was awesome. So go check it out. It's not a bad way to spend a Friday night, even if you got just an hour or two. Those high school football games don't last as long as those pro games. That's the good thing. So it's not quite the time commitment either. So go check it out, nfhsnetwork.com. All right, Palmer, moving on to the last thing we're going to talk about, and D'Amico Ryans shooting a Georgia commercial, basically, from a press conference. He was asked about Kamari Lassiter, and D'Amico Ryans went all in on what he thinks about Kamari Lassiter and what he thinks about the Georgia football program. And I thought it was extremely interesting. I mean, there's the Alabama part of it. You know, there's the part that D'Amico Ryans was an All-American, you know, linebacker at Alabama. But there's also just the part of it that that's an NFL head coach. And what he says about Georgia, you just don't hear teams talk about other programs this way. And it says, he says, for Kamari, you can tell he's built for this. Like when it comes to the mental toughness that plays a lot into being a good football player at this level, you have to be mentally tough. You have to have that next play mentality. And at Georgia, Kirby has done a great job, you can tell, of raising them the right way. Kirby has done a great job with all of his guys. Having those guys NFL ready to go is something you see from Georgia year after year since he's been there. Those guys are plug-and-play type players, and it's a credit to him and his program and how they run things there. You can get a Georgia guy. When you get a Georgia guy, you know you're getting an NFL player. That last line's unbelievable. That last line is like, I mean, I don't know how Georgia doesn't put that on everything they've got.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
put it on a T-shirt.
Sure, there'd be plenty of people to buy that, and you know, put that on the combine shirts or the pro day shirts that they wear, Jake. I mean, yeah. that's an ad right there. And D'Amico was at the pro day this year, right? Wasn't he?
seem to remember him being there, but I wasn't entirely sure.
I feel like he was, or he's been there in the past, or, you know, there's certainly a lot of coaches that make that a stop, a priority place for them. You know, and I think that it speaks volumes when somebody that, especially somebody like D'Amico that has been somewhere else in the SEC in this kind of culture, you know, that he has seen football at so many different levels and that he speaks that highly of Georgia. It says a lot about the players. And, you know, Kamari is a guy that is stepping into a starting spot right away. And, you know, it's not like he was a first round pick. He was early second round, but somebody that the Texans, you know, view as a starter, and to the point that they didn't play him in that Hall of Fame game.
Yeah. I mean, I think we knew Kamari Laster. It's funny to me. We know how good of a football player Kamari Laster is, and we know why. You know, I mean, he didn't do it. He didn't test. You know, I don't. Did he run at Pro Day?
I don't know.
He ran at all. I know he didn't run at the combine.
He might have run at Pro Day. I vaguely remember him running at Pro Day and thinking that wasn't that great of a number. But also, we don't have that great of a vantage point.
Sure. Either way, like, I think we all kind of knew that just Kamari Laster is a football player. And, yeah, you know, hearing Kirby talk, it's not – I will say this. It's not surprising this is where the fire originated, right? Like, it's not surprising this is where the spark came from to talk about Georgia players being NFL ready. Because Kamari Laster, you hear Kirby gush about him after the Orange Bowl, about how he wasn't going to miss that game, about how he was going to play. He was going to go, you know, move on to the NFL draft but he just couldn't leave without playing one more game. You know, some of the ways that, you know, I go back to when Kamari Laster first got to Georgia, summer arrival, one of the rare summer arrivals. And I know we might mention Nate Frazier here, but, you know, Nate Frazier's a running back. We're talking about a defensive back where it's a lot harder to play. Now, like Rusty said, the further you get from the ball, it is easier, but there ain't anything easy about playing cornerback in the SEC. Kirby said they had a decision to make. Were they going to settle him in at star, or were they going to play him at cornerback? Well, they put him at cornerback, and that first year didn't do a whole lot. I think he had an interception at Vanderbilt.
Overthrow that was just basically
a punt. Didn't show any signs of not being a good player either. Wins that starting job in camp. I think bullied it away from somebody who may have had the edge on him, if I'm not mistaken. And then has a fantastic sophomore year and then an elite junior season, despite not really being healthy all year long. I'm not surprised that's where it came from. But to me, to throw a net, a very wide net over the Georgia program, and to have seen enough out of Kamari Laster, and I mean, he was at other places too. I mean, I know D'Amico Ryans is – been around the NFL and has coached some other Georgia guys, but to throw a net around it off of a few guys, I mean, to me, that says you're not really speaking just to D'Amico Ryans. You're coming up in conversations. You're coming up in conversations between, you know, Sean McVay and D'Amico Ryans, or you're coming up in, you know, conversations between, you know, Matt LaFleur and who Matt Eberflus or whoever. Like, you're coming up in conversations with between NFL coaches and execs and GMs. I don't know of any better place to be right now than that. Well, right.
And you turn on the tape around the league and you just see a lot of these young guys that have been at Georgia in recent years contributing. Javon Bullard is somebody, like you mentioned, Matt LaFleur and Green Bay. They have shown that they love Georgia players there. You know, keep that G on, you know, from Georgia to Green Bay. Devontae Wyatt was a first-round pick. Quay Walker was a first-round pick and somebody that played a lot as a rookie up there. Eric Stokes was a first-round pick. You know, Bullard this past year was a second-rounder there. They've shown that they really like those guys. Dejan Edwards stepped in. He wasn't a draft pick, but he stepped in and he's – you know, starting to make some noise in Pittsburgh. You know, had a touchdown in his first preseason game. Kendall Milton and the Eagles, and you know that's one that has come a little bit of a running bit among Georgia fans. But the Philly Dogs, you know, the all the big crew that's up there, and what what's the GM name? GM's name?
With the Eagles?
Yeah, with the Eagles.
Howie Roseman.
Howie Roseman. I was going to call him Nick, but that's Sirianni, who's the head coach. Right. You know, how Howie Roseman and that crew, you know, really values what Georgia has done. There's just a lot of – goes back to what we were saying earlier and how Kirby tests these guys and puts them through the ringer. And, you know, they're going to be put through the ringer at the college level. They're going to show up prepared to be, you know, put through the ringer at the NFL level. And maybe because they've been put through that at the college level – you know, more to a greater extent than some guys might have been, they're ready to play right away.
Yeah. And it's the practice. You know, Rusty made a good point to me, and I'm not sure if he made it on the show or if we were talking privately about this, but I think he'll get it. Is, you know, both of us kind of have some scouts we talk to, and Rusty made a good point to me because I was telling him something that a scout had told me, and he brought up, he said, well, the deal is now is that players, if in the NFL, the way the collective bargaining agreement is if you want physical players, you better draft them because you're not going to develop them. You're not going to make them physical with the rules you have right now. You're not going to be able to instill that into your culture. So if physical toughness and physical football and guys that love to stick their face in there. And listen, I know that that sounds logical. Football, and every coach wants it to an extent. But some coaches value it over everything. Like, I mean, I'm not necessarily speed and all that stuff, but they'll teach, they'll deal with a little stiffness or a little technique deficiency and things like that just to get a physical football player who's going to play the way they want to play it. And so if you're going to get it in the NFL now, you better draft it. And that's where Georgia's kind of made a little bit of a calling card is Bloody Tuesdays and the way these players play on Saturdays. And that's why Georgia has so many NFL scouts come in to practice. They want them to see how they practice as well. And you put all those things together and you've got kind of a little bit of a pipeline thing going right now. It's no different, if not even not quite as good as what Alabama was doing, you know, during the height of the Nick Saban years. I mean, I think it's on par with, close to, but if anything, if there's separation, Georgia's probably a little bit behind what Alabama was doing. But I'm telling you what, man, 17 first-round draft picks in 8 drafts at Georgia. It's pretty impressive. I mean, that's the prior to Kirby getting to Georgia, they had never had 3 players taken in the first round. Now they're almost averaging 3 players in, you know, in the first round over at least over the past 4 or 5 years. So that's pretty incredible. And then I think I counted 35 guys that have gone on the first or second day of the NFL draft, top 3 rounds. So, you know, you're probably looking at over 30 top 100 picks, you know, since Kirby Smart's gotten to Georgia. They've got an NFL pipeline going, and that's something you definitely want in this NIL era where you're trying to maybe convince as many kids as you possibly can not to step over dollars to get to pennies.
And they're going to have more this year. I mean, talented crew coming out. I mean, that 15 that they put out in 2020 from that 2021 team in the 2022 draft is still the high. A lot of folks thought Michigan might get it this past year. I mean, you look at this year's group of Georgia guys and everybody that could go. I don't know that we're talking about 15, but I think that we're getting closer.
If Georgia wins or plays in the national championship game, we will have to watch the draft all the way to the final pick to find out, to make sure that Georgia doesn't pass that number, because that's something we do know. If you make or play in the national championship, yeah, you are about to get drafted, brother. Like, you, I mean, it's almost like a video game 30 pick boost. And for just automatically, I don't know why. I mean, LSU.
It's name brands. I mean, it's the recognition. It's the acknowledgement of, hey, you've played high level football and you've played.
But is it also a chicken or egg thing? You know, like, is it also you're bringing in like, well, they got themselves the exposure and they got drafted high because they got to that point, or is it because you got to that point because you had that many guys talented enough to get drafted that high? I know it's a little of both, but I think I've kind of gone round and round on this. It's almost like you got those guys to put something so great on film for that 1 year that it made you great. And it kind of, you know, that kind of rising tide lifts all boats type thing. It's something I thought about from like a philosophical standpoint. And it's a pretty interesting debate to get to. And like I said, if Georgia goes deep into the playoffs, plays in the national championship game, wins the national championship game, I think 15 is within reach. It really just all depends on who leaves. Because if you're thinking about, you know, if you're looking at, you would love for two or three, you'd love for all four, but at least two or three of like Ernest Green, Dylan Fairchild, Micah Morris, and Jared Wilson to stick around, right? Like you would absolutely love for that to happen if you could get at least two of those guys to stick because you return guys. But if all four go, all four are going to get drafted along with Tate Ratledge, maybe Xavier Truss. That'd be something. Get six offensive linemen drafted in one NFL draft. That'd be crazy. Yeah. But, you know, you could get – and that's six players from one position. That's before you get to Beck, ETN and Colby Young maybe.
And a lot of it, some of these guys we're talking about, they don't have the eligibility left to come back. You know, a Nazir Stackhouse, Warren Brinson, Xavier Truss, Colby Young, Michael Jackson. I mean, these guys are going to – Smile Munden, Chaz right. Chambliss. I mean, we're talking about guys – not all those – seven that I just named are going to get drafted. But, you know, you like to think that.
But Georgia will.
And the Georgia name carries some weight.
That Georgia would love to set that record, but Georgia would love Jalen Walker to be in a Georgia uniform next year, too.
Yeah. You know, like, and Dylan
Bell. They'd love for Ernest Green to stick around. They'd love for Jared Wilson to go year two at center and kind of, you know, turn what was a stable situation to a revolving door a little bit.
Oscar Delp. I mean, they would love for him to be back.
Exactly. Yeah. Ben Urosik's another one out of eligibility.
Yeah, that's another good point. I just did a quick, just off the top of my head, guys that are out of eligibility or guys that we feel pretty confident will probably go pro. Carson Beck, Trevor Etienne, Dominic Lovett, who's out of eligibility.
Yeah.
Colby Young, Ben Urosik, Tate Ratledge, Xavier Truss, Ernest Green probably, Nazir Stackhouse, Warren Brinson, Michael Williams, Smile Munden, Malachi Starks. That gets you to 13. That's before you talk about a Dylan Bell, a Dalen Everett, an Arian Smith, a Tyrion Ingram Dawkins,
Julian Humphries,
Chaz Chambliss.
Yeah. Yeah, that's you got a lot of guys there. You got a lot of guys there. And that record will definitely be within reach for Georgia this coming draft. All right, guys, listen, we will be, for all we know, we could have some emergency stuff go on here over the weekend, stuff we got to report on, but we'll be dark until Sunday, basically. We'll talk to you guys then on the next episode of the Georgia Show. And then don't forget all of our other programming. We've got tons of it. Game week's coming up this week. Be on the lookout for more Kirby pressers and kind of leading into the Clemson game. We'll be wrapping up that presser with a little short show, Palmer and I. We've got Dogs HQ Plus every Tuesday morning. We got Bark After Dark every Monday night, and Georgia Show twice a week. And we'll be coming to you post-game from after every game as well. We'll be coming to you every post-game right after the game. Most of the time, me and Rusty, it may be something different here and there, but we'll be with you for those too.
It's here, Jake. It's here.
It's here. It's here. I knew you had something to say. I had to let you say it. I knew it was going to be profound. Let's get out of here. Y'all take it easy.